Earlier this year, back in January, I reread Homer's Odyssey. I didn't remember a lot of it from high school, I've got to be honest, so I was going to make a trip through it again, and it was very much worthwhile. There was one passage that reminds me strongly of today's gospel, and just briefly, I'd like to share it with you. There's 24 books of the Odyssey, and it traces this 10-year journey of Odysseus after the Trojan War back to Ithaca, where he's from. In book 19, he arrives back with his family and friends, but they don't recognize him because the goddess Athena has granted that he be disguised so that his true appearance, true self, isn't known. This is because his house is overrun by suitors. They think that Odysseus has died and they want to marry his wife Penelope. So the purpose is, while in disguise, he can figure out what he's going to do to restore his home to the way it was before. So in this 19th book, he meets his wife, Penelope, but she doesn't recognize him. His disguise is so complete. He tells Penelope that he fought with Odysseus in this Trojan War. And at the end of the evening, as he retires, this servant, Eurycleia, who has known Odysseus all of his life, since he was a little boy, goes to wash his feet. And it's then something fascinating happens. He remembers in that moment that there's an opportunity for Eurycleia to see this wound that he sustained when he was a young man in a hunting accident. And at that moment, he goes to hide the wound in his leg, but she sees it before he can conceal the wound itself. And because she sees the wound, she recognizes who he is, and she's overcome with joy. She's elated. But they agree that she's not going to tell anyone who he actually is. It's a neat little scene. And then two chapters later, Odysseus is wisened up a bit, and he goes to these two servants, herdsmen, who are a part of the property, and he tells them who he is, but they don't believe him. So he shows them the wound. They examine it, they even touch the wound, and then it says they weep for joy. He then enlists them to throw out these suitors, and at the end of the work, everything ends beautifully, happily, at that point. It's a fascinating little story, and that moment with the wound is powerfully biblical, even though it's taking place, it's written 8 centuries before the birth of Christ. You have the washing of feet, a very biblical symbol, but we also have the investigation of a wound, which is also biblical, a moment we see in tonight's gospel. I'd like to talk about the latter a little bit, particularly the significance of wounds. There's a way in which this maid servant is in some ways representative of the church. She receives us. She cleans us. She's known us our whole lives. She reminds us who we are, and she sends us on a mission in the world. We think of these wounds themselves, and we think of Christ. It's striking in this Easter season that if Jesus can be raised from the dead, it would also be the case that he could be raised in a body that does not bear the wounds of the crucifixion. But the fact that his glorified body bears these wounds not only is not a detriment, but it becomes the occasion of faith in the disciples and others who meet him. So a question we could ask then ourselves is this: if the wounds of the Lord can be glorified and become an occasion of faith, is it possible that the wounds of our lives can also be glorified and transformed? St. Catherine of Siena was a great spiritual mystic in our tradition. She had a vision one time of eternity. She saw the saints, the angels, in the presence of God, and she noticed that the saints were adorned with these bright and gleaming jewels. So she asked the angel who was at her side, "What are the bright jewels that the elect, the saints, are wearing?" And the angel said, "These are the crosses that they bore in their earthly life that have been transformed by the glory of God." The powerful insight into what in us can be transformed by grace. As we think of the wounds that we carry from our lives, some recent, some old, what's needed then is an encounter with the person of Christ. And not just an encounter with him, but in this Easter season, an encounter with his wounds. We see this happening supremely in today's gospel from John chapter 20. At the heart of it is this figure, Thomas, who has a dubitable reputation in a way. What's important about Thomas is that even though he struggles with belief, we see on display a really strong desire to believe, even though he struggles. He's a bit like a father who's in Mark chapter 9, who has a son possessed by a demon. He goes to Jesus and he says, "Will you heal my son?" and cast out the demon. And the Lord says to him, "Do you believe that I can do this?" And the father says, "I do believe, Lord, help my unbelief." It's a very human expression, because most of us know from our own lives that sometimes both of these can be with us at the same time. Belief and disbelief duking it out inside of us. It's a bit like Thomas, who longs more than anything to believe, but needs some strong evidence. He's calling out for it. It's a great painting by Caravaggio that's worth looking up. It's called The Incredulity of St. Thomas. It's a beautiful scene taken right from this gospel passage. It has the Lord drawing back his garment to reveal the wound in his side, and Thomas placing his finger inside the wound. What's neat about it, I think, mostly, is the fact that with his left hand, the Lord is grabbing Thomas and drawing him, pulling him towards the wound, as if that's the great gravity that Thomas needs to encounter. It's fascinating because Thomas is bringing his own wound to Christ. His wound is that he feels like he's not quite capable of believing in the fullness of what he's called to. The Lord is taking his wound, drawing it towards his own. And Thomas leaves enormously strengthened by this encounter. Of all the apostles, none go farther than Thomas, all the way to India. When we think of our own lives, the wounds we carry, the need to encounter Christ and his wounds, it's worth acknowledging that often the wounds of life are what we most try to conceal, to hide, even from God. The missed opportunity is that if we offer to God our strengths, our gifts, our abilities, that's a great thing, because God can do more with them than we can. But the Lord really seems to be eager for the wounds that we carry in life, because if we surrender those as well to God, we become much closer to being the saintly men and women that we're called to. In the year 2000, Pope John Paul II canonized Sister Faustina Kowalska, a Polish nun who was blessed with a mystical insight into divine mercy. At that same time, he declared that this second Sunday of Easter would be Divine Mercy Sunday, because he believed that what Faustina received was not merely a personal revelation, but a universal message for the entire church. It's appropriate because divine mercy is in many ways an interpretive lens or way of understanding all of salvation history. We think of some of the biggest questions of our faith. Why creation? Why incarnation? Why the cross? Why resurrection? All of these great mysteries can be explained in a way through the lens of divine mercy. And there's a real way in which this category is also a key to understanding our own lives. Our lives, to this point, have been shaped in their twists and turns by divine mercy. One of the questions we can ask ourselves then today on this special weekend is, what have I done with divine mercy in my life so far? And then, what is there left to do with divine mercy in my life?